400. We're sorry. The request to listen to this podcast has timed out. Please try again. I'm your host, Mike Apps, aka Wheels, with me as always.
Noted King of the Hill, David McBurney, Fanboy Master.
Yep.
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 Mm-hmm.
This is a post-direct episode, which means there's things.
There are things to discuss. Yes. Videos game.
Which means more game key cards! Woo! Woo! Woo!
Yeah, I expect none left. Nothing.
Although I hear news that Nintendo may be trying to make that happen less often.
There's generally like they're putting out like customer opinion surveys, and they're doing some. They're probably trying to make cartridges cheaper for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah,
I've seen people point out that like, oh well, the cartridges there aren't enough sizes, so smaller games won't do it. And it's like, I mean, I don't think that's why they're doing it. Like, I think that there's not enough data telling them whether people will balk at buying a game at all over a key card.
Mm.
Mixed with, they're way cheaper. Even if you made them, even if you made like a 16 gigabyte one or whatever, they'd still be cheaper. Like, that's just the way of it. Like, I keep coming back to this because it sticks out to me. Yakuza 0 is a game key card. That's a 50 gigabyte game. There is no cartridge size they would have possibly made that would have fit that other than the existing 64 gig card.
Mm.
Like, companies are doing this because it's like, well, we make more per unit, and we don't have data to say whether whether that affects sales yet.
Although they seem they may be getting that data now.
I suspect they are. But, you know, that's going to probably take at least 6 months before that turns into action.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be a bit... Honestly, like, instead of buying key cards, I typically just... I'll just buy the digital copy of the game. I'm not going to sell it anyway. That's simpler for me. But, you know, if nothing else, I would still say, you know, if you are the type of person to sell a game, a key card is still a better option for you than just everything's digital. Here's a code. And again, we're seeing this more and more with other things. We're probably going to see the number of these slowly increase on other consoles as we've started to see it.
You may have some of these on other consoles and not even know it because they were not...
You definitely do. If you have any Microsoft game in the... If you have any Microsoft game in the past, like, year and a half, 2 years, you have a game key card and all but name.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's one of those things, like, I suspect we're going to see more and more of these because, like, even aside from manufacturing costs, which the Switch 2, you know, it's going to be cheaper to make a card that has almost nothing stored on it. What you're going to find is that it just makes it a lot easier to manufacture something and determine how much of something you're going to manufacture before you have final code. So, you know, that can sit in a warehouse as long as it needs to. But yeah, there were some cool things.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, the only companies that surprised me with game key cards was Nis America with...
That, I get why they do it, because they're a small company with small margins, but...
But they should know their audience is going to be fucking pissed off.
Yeah, like, I think that this is... The companies like that in particular are making a very specific calculation that their audience is hardcore enough that they're not going to just not buy the game. But, you know, again... Those companies are small companies, small margins.
Yeah.
So I, like, I'm not going to pretend, like, I think and would hope that Marvelous is seeing dividends from making everything an actual physical card that you get with a game on it. Like, certainly I, as someone who wants to encourage those, am buying Marvelous games that I might have put off or not gotten. Like, even though I've heard very good things about, even though, like, I've, you know, seen interesting info about some of their upcoming lineup of games, I, you know, I might have put those off. Like, you know, I did not purchase Daemon X Machina, even though I had intended to, because I didn't get around to it. But Daemon X Machina 2 is on an actual game card, so I want to encourage that. So I'm getting not just Daemon X Machina 2, I'm getting a fancy version of it.
Same.
And
speaking of Marvelous, if you want to read about one of their upcoming Switch 2 games, my preview for Story of Seasons Grand Bazaar should be live by the time this episode is.
Hooray! I assume there's no embargo that you're currently in the process of breaking.
No, the embargo. No. I could have posted.
The embargo.
I could have posted this at the end of July.
Okay. Yeah, that was one of the things that I was like realizing halfway through a sentence. Oh, I should not be specific, and then it's like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that could have been up days ago. I got the last proof today, so by the time you're listening to this episode on the feed, which I'm going. 407 is late, and you will probably will notice that 407 and 408 are posted back-to-back. I want to get caught up.
The old wheel special. But, yeah, like, it's one of those things that, like, I, you know, I'm not 100% huge on it, but I understand that there's, like, a lot of factors going into why these decisions get made, and I can understand, like, but I... At the same time, I, as a consumer, want to show that appreciation for things like Story of Seasons Grand Bazaar, which I have heard very good things about, for Daemon X Machina 2. Like, those are going to be on cards, so I will buy them just to support that, even though I might have put them off in another circumstance, because I want to show support for those. But I mean, like, there are other, like... If the thing that I'm going to end up not doing mostly is just like if there's a game I want that's only on Game Key Card, I will probably just get it digitally. We were talking about this before we started the show, but like personally, I don't sell games. I just don't. So for me, a Game Key Card is like it does not suit my needs, because for me it just means that there is now a way for me to lose a digital game. If you want to be able to sell it, that makes sense. That's at least giving you an option of like normal ass first sale doctrine. So while ideal, I at least appreciate, I will always say that a Game Key Card is nicer than a code in a box.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You know, it's just non-ideal, but you know, like I'm still like, I'm still fucking stupid. I'm still gonna be like, oh, Persona 3 Reload. I guess I'm that dumb. I guess I'll have two ways to play Persona 3, a game I don't that I've played through 7 times and have no immediate intention to play through again. I guess I'll grab that just to support like Atlas, hey, Switch 2 versions, please.
Yes, please. Did wink, we see wink, Metaphor, wink wink.
Oh, I'm sure Metaphor is coming. My suspicion for why Metaphor wasn't announced would be if you why would you announce both at once?
That would be like, and I'm sure
so that one can cannibalize the other somehow.
Yeah, and I mean this was a partner direct only, so I'm sure there's in the near future there is going to be one with Nintendo games, because we still have Pokemon and Metroid Prime coming this year, and I'm sure they're going to put some focus on both.
I mean, we got Pokemon at the partner, not the partner, but the Pokemon Presents. But what I will say is, one, I think Nintendo said that Metroid Prime 4's demo is going to show up at somewhere.
Yeah, I forget where.
It's at some fan expo. Yeah, it's Fan Expo Canada. There will be an actual, factual, in-person playable demo of Metroid Prime 4. But broadly speaking, Nintendo basically always has an actual Direct in September.
Yeah.
I suspect it will be late September. I can't imagine that it will be like early September, but I suspect late September we will see a full Nintendo Direct that dates Metroid Prime 4 is probably like, if it hasn't been announced by that point, it might get announced at like the expos they're showing it at, but or even just in the Nintendo Direct Today app. Sometimes they just do that. But we also, like, there's other stuff like Splatoon Raiders. They talked about that and have not said shit about it other than saying it exists and that it's a Switch 2 title. We don't know shit about it. They'll probably start outlining what their 2026 games are, because Nintendo, over the past few years, has really, really been into this, you know, and it's worked out very well for them. A game a month. You don't have to like all of them, but every year you're probably going to get a handful of games from Nintendo that will be coming out throughout the year that you care about. And it's clear that is their ongoing strategy. But let's talk a bit about what was in the Partner Direct. Since, you know, there were some cool things.
I will say, just to get this out of the way, so we're going to talk about later, on the physical front, most of the games in this Direct also have Switch 1 versions that are on regular physical releases. So anyone that didn't watch it, you can calm down slightly on that front.
Yeah, the other thing is that a lot of those Switch 1 versions, they end up being kind of a nice compromise, because a lot of them will be, here's a Switch 1 version that's on card, and if you insert it into your Switch 2, you are entitled to the Switch 2 version.
Yep.
That's true of a number of them. Some of them are, like, paid upgrades. A lot of them aren't. Speaking of things that I personally cared about, Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. That's a Switch 1 and Switch 2 game. If you get it on Switch 1, you get the Switch 2 version automatically, seemingly for free. That version, you know, it's one of those things, like, I would imagine that Switch 2 version will be much nicer than the Switch 1 version. I like me some occasional Dragon Ball games.
And this
that one had.
I didn't love Fighters. This looks more like the appropriate venue for a Dragon Ball fighting game. Like 3D.
Yeah. So this is if you're not up and up on your Dragon Ball fighting games, Sparking Zero is a successor to what were in the U.S. They were called Budokai Tenkaichi games. In Japan, they were always called Sparking.
That's a weird naming disparity.
Yeah, I think the Budokai Tenkaichi name was given to the American ones to try to tie it into the then recent Dragon Ball Z Budokai games.
Okay.
So they were just like, you know, give it the, like, the world martial arts tournament in Dragon Ball is called the Tenkaichi Budokai. So Budokai Tenkaichi. But yeah, it's one of those things, like, this is, if you played those games, this is Budokai Tenkaichi 4. But yeah, it's one of those things that's like, it's not meant to be a serious fighter. Like, you aren't meant to, like, there are people who play these competitively, obviously, but it is not built for them. It's like, here is an ungodly number of characters, some of them so obscure that I would have difficulty telling you where they came from. And they're all going to do their big dumb moves. It's a big 3D arena fighter. Like, in many ways, like, the Sparking games are kind of a progenitor to that form of anime fighter, where it's like, the Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm games are a lot like this, where it's like there's a big arena that you move around, and it's like it's designed to allow for really big flashy attacks that you, and like the sense of space that a lot of shonen battle anime have, But yeah, Sparking Zero, Switch, and Switch 2. I'll pick up either the Switch physical version or just like download it on Switch 2. We'll see what happens. But you know, it's these are fun, casual, like beat up some dudes, play some what if scenarios, have a good time, feel nostalgic about Dragon Ball. Here's some random stuff from the most recent stuff. Like, I think the DLC ended up having like Daima characters in it and shit. So, these kinds of things are very up to the minute. The other thing that's always wild to me is Dragon Ball games get wild amounts of post-launch support, more than I would ever have thought.
Kakarot's still getting DLC.
Yeah, there is a Kakarot DLC pack that is like continuing to finish out the story of Daima that is set to launch next year. We have no idea if anything else will follow that, but there is a not insignificant chance that there will be. I think Xenoverse might still be getting DLC.
I think it did get something recently, yeah. It's nuts.
Yeah, let me check. Yep, the Xenoverse 2 got a Daima pack. So I'm not sure if you've been keeping up, Wheels, but Dragon Ball Daima is the most recent Dragon Ball anime. It was a short 20-episode miniseries that aired like at the beginning of at the end of last year, beginning of this year.
I haven't watched it yet.
I have not either, but it, you know, at 20 episodes, it seems digestible. I'll probably end up seeing it.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just very funny to me that like Xenoverse 2 for the Switch 1 8 years ago was a late port.
Yeah,
it's
wild.
Still getting DLC. It is still getting DLC. It is like it's kind of a service game, like it's multiplayer, but like
I think
it's not.
We tried to play multiplayer in that when it first came out, whenever the fuck that was.
Yeah, we were having some issues with that, but like they've just never stopped. Like that game, it just keeps going. Like when that game came out, like God. So let me check something. So when that game came out, the Dragon Ball Super anime had been airing for about a year and had about 2 years left. That anime has now been off the air for 7 years.
Oh God.
Like, it is genuinely insane how long that Xenoverse 2 has continued to truck along. Evidently, it must have a very hardcore fan base. That's all I can say. It's cute. It's a fun game. You get to make your own Dragon Ball character and then go through a bunch of what-if scenarios.
I could see it. I think I think Dragon Ball is still way more popular than a lot of people realize. Like, every time I wear a Dragon Ball shirt around, I always get like a nice shirt comment somewhere.
I feel like that's one of those things where something becomes so sufficiently mainstream that nerds collectively abandon it.
Okay.
There are absolutely huge enclaves of Dragon Ball nerd fans, but they keep to themselves. Dragon Ball fans who are hardcore about Dragon Ball talk to Dragon Ball fans.
Is that going to happen to One Piece? I could be alone in One Piece fandom in Nerdland at some point.
If it reaches a certain critical... If the Netflix live action reaches a critical mass in the U.S., you might manage
it.
But...
I mean, hey, that just got Lego sets. Which I had to...
True.
I had to force myself not to purchase. Because they're expensive and take up a lot of space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so some other quick bits. Apex Legends Switch 2, that makes sense. Original Apex on Switch was a heroic attempt that I believe got worse and worse over time as the game continued to receive updates.
It did, and yet it's unlike some other ports that got abandoned, that one just kind of stayed there. I think they actually had a decent Switch one.
Yeah, it makes sense that they want to get that on Switch too. But yeah. We saw some other stuff like shit like Borderlands 4 getting some gameplay. That one's coming out pretty close on the heels of the PS5 and Series X versions, actually. Another trailer for Shinobi Art of Vengeance. That's cool looking. Pac-Man. It's so much Pac-Man. Pac-Man World 2, the one that every child who purchased a GameCube at some point in the years like 2002 to 2004 had at least a 30% chance of having packed in. Pac-Man World 2 is getting a remake. I felt like this felt inevitable unless World 1 repack had tanked so hard that it like obliterated the concept. this was inevitable because this was always the most popular Pac-Man world. Like this was, like I said, this was packed in with a lot of GameCubes, at least in the US, because it was the way that they disseminated Pac-Man Versus, which was the Pac-Man GameCube to GBA connection game where one player played as Pac-Man on the GBA and could see the whole maze, and three players played on the TV and could only see small bits of the maze as ghosts and tried to kill Pac-Man. Interesting multiplayer thing, but you could not have that as the only pack-in, because that would mean that you could not play the pack-in game unless you had a Game Boy Advance and a link cable along with your GameCube. So it also tended to come with Pac-Man World 2. That was just a game that received good reviews at the time. It was a fun little platformer. So, yeah, once Pac-Man World 1 repack happened, I suspect we would get 2. I don't know if they bother with 3. 3's a really weird game with a really weird development cycle. It was not developed in-house at Namco like Worlds 1 and 2. It was allegedly cobbled together and rebadged as Pac-Man World 3 from an unrelated pitch called Pac-Man Adventures that at one point allegedly involved Don Bluth. Yeah, very strange. Pac-Man talks a lot in it, like a lot. He's a friendly dude, but it is very strange.
Yes. Okay. Now I have this weird, stupid idea in my head. I'm picturing a remake of Pac-Man 2 with animation by Don Bluth.
Like, that would be way more fun than what happened. Like, what you got was a pretty, like, not a horrible, but kind of a by-the-numbers 3D platformer of the era where Pac-Man has to do a lot of punching and kicking.
Yeah.
Not great. For me, though, Yakuza Kiwami 1 and 2.
Woohoo!
Kiwami 1 on Switch will have an upgrade path. You'll probably have to pay like $10 for that. I don't know. Yakuza Kiwami 1 Switch 2 edition and Yakuza Kiwami 2, the excellent remake of my personal, like, most nostalgically beloved Yakuza game. Which also comes with a suite of very strange arcade games. Virtual On is in Yakuza Kiwami 2.
Oh, God. Wow.
Because why not?
Okay.
But yeah. Those are both coming in November. So I'll be grabbing those. Let's see. They showed a completely nonsensical Switch 2 game called Chillin' by the Fire.
Yeah,
mostly just
what
the
fuck
was
that?
I don't know who that was for. Like, I get the concept. I get it in concept. You're like, it's kind of cute as like essentially an accoutrement to voice chat, voice and video chat. Like, you can put on a video chat and like your face gets plastered onto a character, and then you're mostly just chilling at night by a fire, occasionally doing things to keep that fire going. There's no real objective. It is mostly just seems like a weird chat program. I get it. I don't know how much it is. I'm going to actually look that up to see how see if they were being ridiculous with this.
I think the right amount should be $0.
I would accept like a nominal $5 or $10. It's just like, okay, I think that's probably not going to do much, but you know, you do you, whoever made this. But yeah, I saw nothing but absolute confusion. Chilling by the fire is $15. That is too much.
No, thank you.
That should be $5-$10. I don't think 15 is really a sellable price. I get it, but I don't think that's really going to do much. Once Upon a Katamari.
Woohoo!
Like
a new one.
Yeah, the first new one for consoles in 15 years.
That's wild.
The last new quote unquote Katamari for consoles was Katamari Forever. There have been a couple. There was one that was like stuck in Apple Arcade hell and still is. I don't remember what that one is called. What is that? Katamari Damacy Rolling Live, which is apparently unique game. But with a bad name, because that makes it sound like it's some kind of that makes it sound like a remake of the original. But yeah. Yeah, so it is not the first new anything Katamari in 15 years. There was also, on the Vita, there was Touch My Katamari, which is terrible.
I don't like that name at all. I don't like
it. It's not great. It's not a great name. The other thing is that it just doesn't... Those sticks don't feel good, and the gimmick is that you could, like, use the butt touch on the PS Vita to squash and stretch the Katamari to make it fit. It never felt good, the entire game just...
I don't like that name plus that gimmick.
Yeah, it's not great, and like that game was also like an hour long. It was very small. So that Once Upon a Katamari, hopefully, like it's been 15 years. I think that there was a point where they made way too many of these. Like there should never be a new Katamari game every fucking year. But I do think that there is room in the world to occasionally get a new Katamari, and I'm excited for Once Upon a Katamari. It looks fun. I mean, it's Katamari. What more could you want? Let's see. So, yeah, that was nice to see. That's coming to everything. Many of these things are, you know, announced here, but coming to everything, as you would expect. Let's see, other things we would actually care about. We saw a trailer for Star Wars Outlaws, which is out September 4th. I might have to pick that up. Hey, Joe.
Hi. Oh, what's coming out September 4th?
Star Wars Outlaws. I'm just going over what was in the Partner Direct.
Oh, okay. Excellent. I watched it.
But yeah. So did I. But yeah. you know, it's one of those games that's like, I was never going to get around to it on PS5. I just don't like committing that kind of time to being in front of the TV. So I just tend not to get around to those kinds of big games on PS5. So Switch 2 version, sure, I'll try that. There was a cute mouse adventure game called Hella that looked kind of fun. That one's out in 2026. Let's play mouse game. Let's play mouse game together, Wheels.
Very well.
Sure. Let's play mouse game. Persona 3 Reload. This is known quantity. People are upset that it is not coming with episode, I guess, the answer. yeah, my response to that would be they did you a favor. That is... since its inception on the PS2, that content has been bad. It has clarified aspects of the game's narrative in ways that don't actually make it feel any better. And the actual gameplay is a miserable, miserable slog that takes hours and hours to produce these largely unsatisfying answers. My response would be, don't bother. I would pay less for it if it came with it. As it stands, it's, you know, it's Persona 3 Reload. It's $60, whatever. I'll get around to it. I don't really feel the need to play Persona 3 again, but I'm sure at some point I'll be like, I'll play that again and do something stupid. Because I'm really fucking dumb. Let's see. EA Sports Football Club 26, Madden 26. It's just kind of novel to see Madden actually on a Nintendo platform again. It has not been contemporaneously on a Nintendo platform since, like, the Wii?
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I'm like, well, good on you for finally putting games on Nintendo console. Unfortunately, they're dumb sports games that I will never play. So,
how dare you? How dare you insult Footy?
So, as far as I can tell, Madden 13 on the Wii U was the last time that EA a contemporaneous Madden on a Nintendo console. That game came out on so many things. There is a Vita version of that game.
Really? Wow.
But yeah, so it's been a very long time. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm going to bring this up over and over again. WWE 2K25 is an incredibly, like, impressive game. And the very known quantity of what you can, like, what you're going to need to render in a sports game is probably going to make it, like, you know, you can do impressive things on this platform if you know exactly what you're going to have to render. So, yeah, I suspect that'll be a perfectly fine way to play Madden. See, and yeah, it's like, you know, fully contemporaneous with the other versions, down to if you pre-order it, you get it early, just like every other version, which, again, should be normal, but, you know, for many years, this has not been normal on Nintendo platforms to get these games day and date. If they come at all. You had FIFA games coming to the Switch for years that were just legacy editions. Those were weird.
What were those even?
So there's that. They were just roster updates. That's what a legacy edition was. Jeez. It was just a roster update. No new features. They just ran with the old game with the updated rosters. We got Final Fantasy Tactics, the Evil East Chronicles. We got a proper understanding that I believe that one is that one of the ones that, like, it's you can get it on a Switch card or a Switch 2 key card. Yes. The Switch card will entitle you to a free update, free upgrade. That is my understanding. I'm not sure if that's the case for this one, but that is my best guess. Contradict me if I'm wrong.
No, that is correct.
Hooray!
Which makes one of the other ones confusing.
Which one I'm talking about. God. Are you talking about Octopath, or
Octopath Zero, which is coming to Switch 1 and Switch 2, and there's no upgrade whatsoever.
Yep, that game is reconstituted from the guts of a gacha game that I don't think still exists, but who knows? I'm always happy when a gacha game gets to reincarnate into a real video game. Good to see that at least. Team Asano / the HD2D games have been the most mysterious in terms of whether they get Switch 2, like how they interact with Switch 2. We got a surprise DQ3 Switch 2 patch that essentially makes it a Switch 2 edition in all but name.
Cool.
Like it bumps it up to run at Switch native resolutions or 4K resolution. If you are plugged into a TV, it bumps the game's native frame rate up to 60 FPS in performance mode or 30 FPS in quality, but with much higher resolution, additional graphical features. And both of those frame rates are met much more consistently than Switch 1's 30 FPS cap. So, yeah, they patched it in the same way that like Pokemon and like a bunch of Nintendo games got patched, where it's like, yes, this is a patch, but it's a patch that basically brings it in line with all the other, with like the PS5 and Series X versions. So that was nice. Capcom threw wheels at Bone.
They did. Monster Hunter Stories yes. 3.
Yep, Twisted Reflection.
Give me.
Coming in 2020.
That's why I joked, like, right after I watched it, I'm like, did you get a job with Nintendo or something? Like, why does it seem like this whole presentation was for you? Yeah.
We saw some more.
I wanted more. Really? I wanted more, Joe. I wanted more.
I want the world. We really saw them stretch the definition of what counts as partner by showing Hyrule Warriors 3, which is developed by Omega Force, but is still based on a Nintendo franchise. Mm. And you know, it's Hyrule Warriors 3. Hopefully this time it doesn't run like dog shit. But yeah, the aforementioned Octopath Traveler Zero, which comes to Switch 2 and everything else in December. And like I said, it's reconstituted from a mobile game, but like I said, it seems to have been... People seem to have thought very highly of it, other than the gacha shit. So they took that and turned it into a real game, so... I'm happy for that. Square Enix was kind of here in force. Another thing that would lead Joe to be suspicious about our potential connections here, Romantic Saga 2 Revenge of the Seven Switch 2 Edition.
That one too.
In my wildest flights of fancy, I would not have guessed that they would go back and give that an updated Switch 2 edition. So $10 upgrade, or if you just buy it, it's actually the same price as the Switch version. So you, like, if you're just buying a new one, you don't even have to consider, like, if you just have a Switch 2, there's no real reason to even consider the Switch 1 version. But, you know, a $10 upgrade price, it's like, you know, I prefer it to be free, obviously, but it's not the worst thing in the world. It's $10, whatever. I bought that game last year. Like, to me, that is money already spent. So I went and grabbed the update. It's really nice. You know, the game runs higher resolution, rock solid 60 FPS, much loading times and just general smoothness. That's to me, but it is a, you know, it's nice. It's a good upgrade. I had to immediately go in and turn off the motion blur because I thought that I was like having a stroke, but that's how I respond to most like really heavy uses of motion blur, which are popular with some kinds of people, but you can turn it off. But you know, it's a very nice version. It was nice to see that. It was nice to have an upgrade path for it. Octopath. But I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about what to me was the surprise star of this, which is the new action RPG from Team Asano, The Adventures of Elliot, The Millennium Tales, which sounds like a shareware PC game from 1993. But is actually a really good Zelda style sort of top-down Zelda, has like with a bit more RPG to it, but definitely has that spirit. It's just really good. Like, it was one of those things where, like, yeah, I can dog on the title all I want, and I will, because The Adventures of Elliot is just feels like it lacks a certain weight to it. Like, there's just something that's not... It doesn't conjure enough image. But the actual game is really good. Like, there's some overworld to explore, essentially, like, Breath of the Wild shrines, but also, like, an actual dungeon or two. And it's just fun to explore. It has, like, that old-school Zelda style. The first thing I thought of when I was playing it was actually, like, Alundra, like, this sort of PS1 era of Zelda knockoffs, where you would have, like, sort of... You know, so other people taking up the torch of 2D Zelda while Nintendo was moving on to Ocarina of Time. You had these sorts of 2D Zeldas that were more complex than what you could do on Game Boy, but were still very much in that old school 2D vibe. There's some, like, in the demo, you have your sword, bombs, what amounts to the Pegasus boots. And, like, limited teleportation, and the dungeon designs make good use of all of those. You have a full jump. It's fun, and it can be, like, if you... the way that the game describes difficulty is, like, normal for people who aren't very good at action games, and hard for people who have experience with action games. You put it on hard, that game has real teeth.
Okay.
But it's really good. It's just very... It's one of those things where, like, I started playing it, and it's like, this is just a game that just has the fundamentals down really well. So, and it has some issues, obviously. This is an early demo in the same way that, like, when they announced Octopath Traveler and Triangle Strategy, they were announced as Project Octopath Traveler and Project Triangle Fantasy. And, I mean, obviously both of those turned out to be the full names, but broadly speaking, they were taking feedback for, like, it was an early enough demo that they were just saying, like, here's what we have as, like, a vertical slice, and we want feedback for what you want us to change about it. And they're doing that with Adventures of Elliot, even though it would have been very funny if they had labeled this project Adventures of Elliot, but sadly they did not. We do not get to live in that beautiful world, but it is like a demo where they're taking feedback, and I'd recommend people try it if they have a means to do so. It's very good. And like I said, it has some signs of being early. Like, there can be some weird stutter and shit going on, but in general, it's very good. It's very polished, and it feels very, it's just fun to explore. And I was very, I thought it looked cute in the direct, but I was surprised at how good it actually was. So, recommended. But yeah, so that's most of the Partner Direct. The other thing is that, like, once that Partner Direct finished, it feels like certain, like, Nintendo, like developers stopped sort of holding back Switch 2 announcements. So I've seen a lot more games over the past week just sort of be like, and there's a Switch 2 version in their list of platforms, where for a while it was like, huh, mysteriously there isn't one.
Right.
But yeah, it seems like some games were held back out of uncertainty about whether they might be appearing in a future Direct for a while. I know that actually Koei Tecmo just announced the Ryza trilogy is getting a Switch 2 version.
I think they announced that a while. I thought they announced it a while ago.
I only just saw it, so yeah, maybe I'm just out of the loop.
That was a while ago. I don't think they put out a lot about it, though.
Yeah, we've just gotten more details about, like, when it's actually coming out. And some of the additions that are being made, because it's like the Ryza DX versions, basically. Probably just stuff that was DLC at one point, but incorporated into the game. But yeah, that'll be a good excuse for me to finally play those. But yeah, so, you know, that's been kind of fun. It was a fun Partner Direct. If you were, like, really, you know, out of your mind about the lack of announcements. It maybe didn't fulfill everything you dreamed of. There will probably be a full Direct in September, whatever. But there were some cool things, and especially some unexpected things, and I was glad to not have to spend 3 minutes looking at my phone while they tried to pretend that I didn't know what an Elden Ring was. Mm-hmm. So, because that's always one of the things that, like, it's just like, oh, okay, here's a port, like, you know, here's a port of a game I'm looking forward to, but I already know what this game is because it's been out on something else for years. Right. You don't need to pretend to me that I don't know what Elden Ring is. So,
I have it on two platforms, and I beat it on both, and have crazy high level characters.
Yeah, I will probably pick up the Switch 2 version in a vain hope that I will finally play more than 10 hours of it.
Right, and I'm assuming the Switch 2 version will include Shadow of the Erdtree.
It does.
Okay.
It also comes with Night Rain.
Oh,
but I'm not sure on that one.
That's wild.
I mean,
I have no interest in Night Rain, but
it's a separate game.
Is it?
Yeah.
Like, it's still a DLC.
No, it's not.
No, that's its own game.
I mean, it's...
No, it's its own separate thing.
I'm pretty sure that it's still technically also a DLC.
Maybe it's both. I don't know.
Yeah, I believe it is something that essentially was a DLC. And then but was also sold as its own product. I have no idea if the Switch 2 version will contain it. I would bet no, but again, I don't remember if they said one way or the other.
Okay.
But
what was that other?
They definitely said it has Erdtree.
What was that weird FromSoft steampunk game?
You're thinking of Dusk Bloods, which is similar to, it is primarily a multiplayer like co-op thing.
Okay.
It seems to be like Dusk Bloods and Night Rain are both kind of in that same vein. Okay, we've put these off for a bit, so I wanna hit some of the questions FireMiner's been asking. Because we have a bunch of them. I asked last month about new games for old consoles, whether new games for old consoles were being pirated a lot. Lo and behold, while Earthion has only come out on Steam and the Genesis version is delayed to next year, someone has already decrypted the ROM in the Steam version and spread it online. Yuzo Koshiro had to go on Twitter to tell people to not pirate the game. You can make an interesting case looking at the responses to Earthion's case. A lot of it boils down to people asking Yuzo Koshiro to make the Genesis ROM available for purchase. New Genesis games being sold on Steam usually are just ROM files with a prepackaged open-source emulator. What do you think about the argument that because of that, Steam users are entitled to the Genesis ROM?
You're not
my
entitled
thought process
to shit.
Yeah, when someone sells you something, you are entitled to the thing they sold you. You can make an argument they should be including the ROM because that will, like, theoretically increase sales. That's an argument to be made. Because I purchased it, like, you know, broadly speaking, you got the ROM. You got some read-only memory. But more broadly speaking, like, yeah, someone decrypted it. Like, that's something you're allowed to do with things you purchase. You're allowed to fuck with them. But broadly speaking, the idea that, like, they owe you an unwrapped ROM conceptually, I don't have strong opinions on that and don't honestly... Like, my thought process is, like, it's nice when I get an MP3 and it comes with the option to get a FLAC or an OGG, but if I don't get that, I don't think that I have been robbed in some fashion. like, that's just the way it goes. The other thing I would say is that in this particular case, what you're looking at is probably at least in part someone being like, well, I used this emulation wrapper because this is how I felt it best displayed the game. And I didn't want people to just get a ROM and, like, throw it into 5 million shitty emulators that, like, don't run it properly. You know, and that's me being mean. There are a lot of, like, good emulators that do a lot of different things, but, you know, you could if Steam somehow just gives you the unwrapped Genesis ROM, you could throw it into something that it doesn't run right proper. It doesn't run properly on, and then suddenly, the company is getting, tech support requests for why is it breaking when I run it on this version of Kega Fusion from 2007.
Ugh.
And that's the answer is you're running it on a version of Kega Fusion from 2007, but we gave you the unwrapped ROM and that meant that you were left to your own devices to make sure that you didn't do something stupid with it. Which is one of many reasons that a company might be disincentivized to just give you a ROM file and say go nuts. End users will frequently do something that every indication is that you aren't supposed to do it, and then it'll cause problems, and they will respond by asking you, why'd it do that? And every person who has ever worked any sort of tech support has had to deal with this. Literally everyone.
Yep. What do you mean my computer has to be plugged in?
It is endlessly frustrating. So I don't blame someone for being like, nope, you have to run it in the Genesis emulation wrapper that we have included with it, because that is how we intend it to be presented. On some level, you can absolutely make an argument that they should give you the unwrapped ROM that you can do what you will with. At the same time, I feel that there is a very compelling reason why companies frequently don't want to give you access to things that will let you play the game in a way that will cause you to say the game was a bad experience. And it happens over and over. For the same reason that a lot of times you aren't given access to certain settings in a game settings menu. It's just you're gonna, there isn't a non-zero chance, and in fact a fairly significant chance, that you will set this setting to something shitty and then say, hey, the game looks like shit. We see this with all sorts of end-user manipulable settings, people playing on hard and saying the game is too hard. It's one of the classic examples, and this is just another avenue of that. At some point in a mix of we want to make sure that it looks right and we want to make sure that it that the user can just click the button and play it, between those two things they just decided, you know what, it's prepackaged with this wrapper and we're not just going to give you a ROM that you can fuck yourself over with. I don't know what kind of deal Ancient made with limited run games, but Earthian on Steam has its ROM files encrypted. You can't just take that file out and run it on an emulator. Yeah, publishers will have something to do with that as well. This would be essentially a very soft form of anti-piracy. But broadly speaking, again, I think at least some of it is just down to we would very much like you to play this game the way we intended instead of fucking with it, which is true of many things. Okay, and what is the deal with people who think that because limited run games is bad, that they'd rather buy the ROM directly to play on their FPGA console, because Yuzo Koshiro said that Ancient won't sell the ROM, those pirates have the rights to pirate people. We see this over and over, is people don't have, people have a lot of positions that don't have, a coherent way that they've been arrived at. They have, people emotionally reach a conclusion, and then they try to find a way that justifies the feeling that they already had. And I'm not immune to that. None of us is immune to that. That is just built into the way humans operate, and we just have to try to push against it at all times. But yeah,
humans, that's the thing. We don't seek information and then formulate opinions. We formulate opinions and then only look for information that validates that. Yeah.
And we can push away from that. We can push it away from that. We can try to avoid our own confirmation biases. But especially with things the concept of value is really nebulous and really, really person specific.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to something that's like, that causes someone to argue, I'm being ripped off. You get really, really specific feelings and a lot of, like, you get very specific concepts that people feel strongly about. But also, there is just endlessly the fact that, like, we get this very strange perceptual gap with video games in terms of, like, the data itself, you know, what we'll call a ROM or an ISO or what have you, it's just data. Like, once it's dumped somewhere, it's treated as, well, I'd be silly to pay for it to a certain kind of consumer. Mm-hmm. Like, I would be silly to pay for this because it's free. It's on there and it's free. And ultimately, once someone is used to getting something for free, it's basically impossible to sell it to them. Like, you know, you can observe any time that someone, that a company releases, like, a handful of games together, packaged together in an emulator. Like, the response will inevitably be, this is too much, no matter what, this costs too much, no matter how much it actually cost. Because the answer is that it's always going to cost infinitely more than it did when it was free. And, you know, people don't have strong feelings about the value, the worth value of old games. There's an infinite discussion to be had about who has the right to profit from them. Like, there's the legal right is very easy to determine, but, like, the moral right is much more up in the air. Like, the people who own the legal rights to profit from making copies of something are often completely disentangled from the people who actually created it. The argument about who should have that right, how long that right should last, you know, any discussion of copyright has all sorts of, like, dumb nuances to it. I say dumb just by dint of, like, it's heinously complicated, but, you know, all of those are really complicated, but they also flare up a lot of different elements of confirmation biases and just general, like, appeals to very abstract forms of morality. And ultimately, most people who are complaining are doing so, you know, will ultimately be doing so from a point of trying to best justify the decision that they felt that they had decided to make. That is just what ends up happening. And it just so happens that people who were intending to pirate a video game are more likely to come up with moralizing justifications for, well, they should have given it to me anyway. I was really that, like, for one reason or another, this was something that they should that I should have been able to get anyway, and since they will not provide it, this is my only recourse. And ultimately, like, over the years, I've, like, anyone who's listened to this podcast is probably sick of hearing it because I talk over everyone and I say it a lot, but basically, ultimately, my response to that would just sort of be, like, if you, like, you wanting something is, you know, I understand wanting something, but if they won't sell it to you, the answer isn't to just take it. Like, you at that point, my response would, for especially for a new game like this, the answer would be don't buy it. Instead of, well, it's mine now. I'm not huge on that, especially for, you know, relatively smaller developers. Like, Ancient's not exactly a big operation. So I don't get good feelings out of that. But yeah, that's a whole, like, as is clear from just how I tried to gloss over so much of that subject, that's a big long discussion that will never end. I feel the same way I do about it as when people start saying that, like, when people start arguing about prices for games that they actually will purchase. It's just one of those situations where it's like you're having an argument about what is a good value, and value is extremely person dependent and cannot really be litigated. Okay. So another one. I don't know if it's the same thing in Magic the Gathering, but in Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon, some people will get very angry when you talk about cards that cost more than $50. I get why people don't like the idea that certain decks will cost a few hundred bucks if you want to play them quote-unquote right. That's why Konami has been reprinting the rare cards a lot, but like, some people just want to collect everything at a minimum cost. Yeah, it's the value thing. It's the value thing again. Yep. I get being unhappy at the idea of a game where the individual cards shoot up in value and suddenly become very expensive, and it becomes very expensive to run a deck. That you are, but at that stage, you are arguing against the very concept of finite resources.
Yeah, I will tell you, the only Magic cards worth more than $50 are either A, like a special variant version, or B, something that won't be reprinted. That's it. Hard stop.
Ultimately, I have a friend who works in a game, who's worked in like game shop and supplies and shit, and has talked about how like dealing in Yu-Gi-Oh! Singles is like the worst idea in the world, because like, you know, once in a blue moon, something that's old might suddenly become valuable because it suddenly was made part of the most horrifying combo imaginable. But then Konami will just reprint it in a structure deck that costs $8.
Suddenly I love Konami. I love this.
It was like he described it as like the equivalent, the game shop equivalent of trading in penny stocks. But yeah, like broadly speaking, those will fluctuate wildly high from the moment that a new deck suddenly becomes expensive. And then, like, they'll put it in a structure deck or reprint it as a common, and suddenly those prices will crash. But, yeah, it's one of those things that, like, ultimately what you're complaining, what you're arguing against is the concept of physical scarcity. And even for something that is, printed in heinous excess, like, you know, the company obviously doesn't want to print something to such heinous excess that it never shows up, that it floods the market and is valueless, and they don't want to print so few that people won't even try to find them. You get into this ugly thing where it's like, yeah, that sucks. There's, for a physical card game, there's literally no way to solve it.
Yeah,
like you can only. You can only chase the results of it. Like, if something goes up in price, you print it again. That's about all you can do. But inevitably, that means it's going to trail the immediate high watermark of value. Like, that's just inescapable. The very notion of printing physical objects requires that this be the case.
Yeah, and if anyone's wondering, just like yesterday I was on Amazon and those new Final Fantasy MTG decks are already selling under MSRP, in case you're wondering. So
yeah, I'd imagine that after the initial frenzy, they reprinted a bunch of them because they were popular, and now you can get them.
And those were an oddity, because generally speaking, those decks are only above MSRP if they either are really good or have really good cards in them that are hard to get. And those decks are just okay.
Yeah, ultimately what ended up happening there was that there was a rush of people who like Final Fantasy merch suddenly purchasing cards not as play tokens, but as here's more for my Final Fantasy collection.
Yep.
Yeah, and
that's why I thought about getting one of them, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm. And honestly,
I might get one now that they're cheap.
Yeah. They're well, there's that. Well, because I wanted to get the Final Fantasy 14 one because I just play that a lot, and Ishtola is one of the commanders, and she's a cool, awesome cat lady who does like crazy sorcery. And then it's like, I couldn't get one. And it's like, do I really want to get back into this? I sold my whole collection years ago. I had no one to play it with. And then it's like, I was one of those people, like, I really like the game, so I might want to get the deck and then just never open it. But I don't know. But I also don't like to buy things that I have no intention of actually using. So, and I typically sell things that I haven't used. So,
I like the occasional shelf piece. I might get something for like FF7 or something that contains a bunch of Cactuars.
Yeah. When we talk about rare items that weren't printed a lot and also game pirating, it's like, man, the Sega Saturn market is just absurd. And I'm not ashamed to say that, you know what, I'm sorry, I'm not paying $400 for a used dirty game on eBay.
That's
I'm not
different
doing that.
There's no way to tell Sega, hey, here, take some money and give me like,
yeah, that's true,
give me this game. So like, you should not
buy
any physical version of any of that shit.
Yeah.
We run into, like, I glossed over this a bit, but, like, you know, again, the question of who has the right to make money off of these old games, and, like, if you're going for,
if the original publisher or developer were selling it to me, I would pay them, but if it's just some doofus on eBay, no, I'm not giving them my money. Yeah.
Yeah, like, broadly speaking, that's what I'm getting at, is that everyone has their own individual idea of, like, who has the right to make money off of these. And what I would say is that, like, I personally am not terribly wedded to the physical object. If there is an official re-release, I'm basically always preference to that.
Yep.
Same.
But if there is no physical re-release, and, you know, the product is out, then I'll make there. But
yeah, I just bought I got Ninja Gaiden Ragebound. Yeah, and basically like, I got it on Steam because they offered me a discount because I already own Blasphemous 1 and 2, and I had $1 credit on the account from selling the digital trading cards, or not, you know, like, you get like 5 or 10.
I never understand
Steam
trading cards, but I understand what you mean.
Well, you craft the badge and you level up.
No, I know what you're talking about. I'm just saying, like, I don't understand the allure of them.
Well, that's the closest I'll ever get to, like, stock trading, is the way I see it. I don't know. It's a fun little thing to do sometimes. You know, I get a card just for playing a game. I sell it for 5 cents, and I get 5 cents off the next game I buy. So in this case, I had like $1, but from selling a bunch of them. But then, yeah, but basically, like, that game was like, you know, yeah, I ended up getting it for $20 on Steam. I can play it on deck. And I really like the company. They're a Spanish studio. From what I can tell, they treat their workers favorably. And it was like, yeah, I want to support this team. So it was, you know, it's like, fine, I'll buy that at launch. You know, I'll give you $20. Why not? You know, you ordered it. You're a good company. So.
And I will say that Ragebound is excellent.
Good. I didn't start it yet, but
I've started it. I'm a few levels in. It's very, very good.
Cool. Just a quick anecdote. Like, when I was a kid, you know, well, I grew up in a small town, and there was this one, like, hobby shop that sold, like, baseball cards, and they might have had Magic cards at one point before they went under. But, you know, it was just some guy, just some regular guy who owned it. And I would hear these stories about how these men would go in there, like, right when it opened, right when they got a new shipment of baseball cards, and buy, like, all of them for the chance of getting, like, a Derek Jeter rookie card or something to that effect. And it was like, really? Yeah.
Like, there's so many stories like that. Like I said, a friend of mine works, has worked with game shop supplies. He's talked a bit about, like, the horrors of watching people try to do pack weighing. If anyone remembers that lovely practice, it turns out, for those not aware, at least for a long time, although allegedly they've gotten these close enough that you would need, like, even the most scientifically accurate weights would not successfully determine which was which. But for a long time, a holographic card weighs different than a non-holographic card. So you could weigh different packs and determine which one would which one to purchase based on weight. There's you know, the game stores would have situations where, like, because of the way rarities are distributed, like, certain companies will have, like, this kind of rarity only shows up once per box or once per crate. And so you'll get these situations where, like, if someone opens up their cards in the store and reveals that they have purchased or reveals that they have pulled a card that only shows up of a rarity of once per box, you will get the people saying, like, who will not buy from the box that is open, which is typically how you buy single like booster packs. It's like, here's a bunch of, here's a box that is open, pull a booster pack out of it and purchase it. They won't buy those. They'll just say, please open another box because I want a chance at the once per box rare. Like, these kinds of, this kind of shit, like, people are constantly finagling for how to get the things they want.
In one instance where I pulled a Planeswalker from a Magic, from like a Fat Pack or something. And you know what I did? Like, the very next day, I went to a store and sold it for $30 in store credit and bought another Fat Pack. Because that's what I'm saying. I'm like, you know what? I just pretty much made my money back, you know, on that Fat Pack. So yeah, I'll just get another one because I'm not going to put this in a deck and I'm not going to wait 3 months for it to drop in value when nobody wants it anymore.
Were you selling for $30?
Oh, it was like, what's his name? Garrick? The It was like a werewolf version of Garrick or something like that. I don't know.
And that card's not that good.
I think it was Innistrad, and I think it was the green Planeswalker and some kind of werewolf version of him. I don't know.
I hate Innistrad.
Okay. That's what I think it was.
You're not digging deeper into this.
No, it's just,
I loved Innistrad. Innistrad was vampires and werewolves.
Yeah, but they've gone back there like 5 times.
What?
Like, let it go.
We're not going deeper into this.
I refuse to not go into this. Like,
okay,
and Wizards has gotten better now, but there was this phase where they were going to the same planes over and over again.
Well, we're still technically answering Fireminer's question, aren't we?
Yes, but I am going to die if I talk too much about card games.
Okay. But that was my point is, I wasn't one of those crazy people. The one time I got a really valuable card, it's like, oh, I better sell this. You know?
I watch. Get while the getting's good. Okay. another one. It's the same mindset so many gacha gamers have. They expect to play a gacha game and expect to get every character while paying nothing. Yeah, it's... like, it's one of those things where, like, even in my ideal world, where instead of gacha, you would just have to, like, they would just say, here's the new characters, like, they won't be going anywhere, they cost this much, take it or leave it. Like, that's my ideal world. Even in my ideal world, people would be, like, you know, they can't give you everything for nothing and turn a profit. There's just no way to do that.
No.
Eventually you're going to have to decide whether something is worth what they're asking for. And at some point you're going to have to just say, if it's not okay, I just won't get to have it. Like, that's how these things go.
Yep.
Like, at some point it's just like, yep, that's, I guess I just don't get it. I guess I just don't get to have that.
Yeah, so what happened was Paws had reached out, since I'm streaming for Epic Gamer now, and it said, you know, is there anything you need hardware-wise, and please don't say Switch 2. And I was like, oh, I already have a Switch 2. What I really want is a GTX 5090. Like, and he was like, oh, I walked into that one. So, yeah, I've accepted the fact that I will not have a $2,000 graphics card. I will never be able to justify paying that much for something that'll be obsolete in a year or two. So, no, that's just to your point. Yeah. I will go without. Did I lose you?
No.
Sorry. For a moment.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay. Let's quickly hit some stuff. Nothing you did. Okay.
Okay.
Hit them real quick. Talk about how forums at all haven't influence us when it comes to the quote-unquote correct version of a film or game to enjoy, but like from the way people talk online, it's almost like everyone's perpetually broke and just buying full-price games are a box of Yu-Gi-Oh cards and life as a life and death investment. Are people being hyperbolic, or that kids are more likely to comment? Little column A, little column B, little column, like, nuance is very, very hard to communicate, and social media exists to suffocate it in the crib. So, yeah, I think a lot of it is just people want to, like, the collector mindset is the must have the best mindset is very close, is very in it's very similar to slash adjacent to the collector mindset. And yeah, people like the other thing to remember is that the kind of person that's going to sit there and like perseverate over how much they don't like the price of something, it usually means they care a lot about it. It means they keep talking, like if someone's going to keep talking over and over about how much they don't like something, they don't like the cost of something, a person who genuinely does not care doesn't keep bringing it up. Right. Like if you have already made the decision, I don't like this, it's not a good value, I'm not going to do it, that's it. You're done. You don't have anything to talk about anymore. If you're someone who on some level really wants what they're talking about, no matter how much they say, oh, this is a bad value, I'm not going to get it, if you have to keep saying I'm not going to get it, you're going to get it. Like at some point you are going to, that wall is going to break and you're going to do it. I'm reminded of like the incredibly funny, like on Switch 2 launch day, this image I saw of like a YouTuber like saying, essentially like, I'm sorry, I failed. And it was literally just someone being who had spent like a month saying, I'm not going to get a Switch 2. I hate how much it costs. And it's like, guess what, buddy? You wouldn't have spent a month complaining about it if you weren't going to do it.
Yep. You just had to sit
a little bit longer. That's all.
It's one of those, it's not even that. It's just a case of like, if you didn't want one, you wouldn't be so upset about the price.
Right.
You want it cheaper because everyone wants their thing.
On the topic of value, Switch 2 is a great value. You can play Mario Kart World. You can play Donkey Kong Bonanza. You can play updated versions of Switch 1 games that don't look and run like ass. It's like, I
even
fucking love this
even
thing.
Even if they haven't been updated, they often run so much nicer.
It's cheaper. I was than playing Steam Deck and way the fuck better.
Yes, I don't even though Steam Deck. Fuck the Steam Deck. I don't even want this thing anymore. yeah, but no, I was playing Animal Crossing, and it's like, yeah, it looks the same. It runs the same. There was nothing wrong with it, but it's like, wow, what a noticeably shorter load time to get into the game. That's great. That game had really long load times.
It's nice to just be able to jump in.
Yeah, and collect some fruit and sell it and then get bored after 20 minutes and shut it off.
That sounds like my Animal Crossing experience.
Yeah. I did everything you could do in the game and then I lost my island and had to do it again. And now I jump in periodically just to sell all the fruits and vegetables that I grow and, you know, that's about it.
I thought that was going to be my Story of Seasons experience. It has not been thus far.
Well, I've been playing Rune Factory Guardians of Azuma, which RP Gamer
owns,
sent me a free copy. Thanks again.
Owns so much.
I know.
It's
and
a very good game.
So that's what that conversation amounted to, by the way. It was, yeah, of course I was being facetious about a freaking $2,000 graphics card. I was like, well, what if there was, what if someone who already had a Switch 2, you know, was willing to stream a particular game? Or, you know, what if there was a game you wanted somebody to stream and, oh, gee, not everyone has a Switch 2, but maybe somebody does. And they were like, all right, come on, get to the point. I was like, oh, how about Rune Factory Cough? So,
are you saying we could have begged for Wild Hearts codes?
Maybe. If you were going to stream it on the RP Gamer channel.
Oh, that's true. Which we'll talk about soon, by the way.
But yeah, we'll talk a little bit about Wild Hearts.
And I'm sorry in advance. So I'm going to have to take a swipe at Monster Hunter Wilds during that discussion.
Yeah, I'm going to take a piss while you do that.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, though, Guardians of Ozma, of course, I streamed it the other day, and I'm going to keep streaming it. And the recurring joke, of course, was, I got to get wood for the goddess, you know.
Oh, Lord. So,
yeah, it's awful.
We're all adults here.
I'm an adult. Okay. To hit a couple more before we go into the Wild Hearts stuff, because it is getting late, so we'll probably start winding down relatively soon, but... Fireminer says, last week I asked about Square Enix gacha games that go on for surprisingly long. Terada of Tekken fame once talked about how game franchises lived and died because some C-suite just loved them too much to never abandon them, hence why Soul Calibur died on the vine. Someone at Namco Bandai must love Dragon Ball to the bits. Well, thing is, Dragon Ball never stopped selling, the other thing. And again, recently the first editor of Dragon Ball, now a director of Bushiroad, commented that if Dragon Ball... forever to end the Japanese economy will undoubtedly suffer. We're talking about too big to fail here. Yeah, like, I don't, like, I'm, well, okay, I'll put it this way. There are people within, like, the movers and shakers that have control over the Dragon Ball license that love it to death and have opinions about what to do with it that are not grounded in what they think will make the most money, but what they think is ideologically important for Dragon Ball as a concept.
Wow.
Which is why there are currently, allegedly, some kinds of internal strife about the direction to take the franchise now that Toriyama has passed. But, yeah, broadly speaking, like, the reason that those will inevitably get sorted out is because Dragon Ball is too profitable to stop making stuff from it. So,
I mean, hey, that last movie was owned. I would like some more, please.
Superhero? Yeah, Superhero is a lot of fun. I think the recent movies have been the most consistently good things. Like, even the weakest of them, Resurrection F, is still, like, a good time. The batting average of recent Dragon Ball movies, and by recent I mean since the mid-2010s, the batting average on them has been much higher than the old Dragon Ball movies, where it's like, oh, this is bad, and it looked bad, and it wasn't fun. We get three goddamn Broly movies, and they are all terrible.
But hey, then they brought him back in a better movie.
Yeah, they brought him back and had Toriyama actually, you know, decide to do something with him, which, like, even, you know, no matter what you think of Super Broly, like, it was at least a thought process about what this character should be other than the strongest guy. Mm-hmm. Like, those old Broly movies, it's just like, what if there was a guy but stronger? And it's like, that's Dragon Ball, buddy. Well, what if he was even stronger than that? Like, no further thoughts, no further ideas. What's his motivation? He really hates Goku. Why? Goku cried next to him when they were both literal babies.
What the fuck?
That is the original backstory of Broly. They were both in the same nursery. Goku was next to Broly, and he cried a lot before being sent to Earth. And Broly remembers this somehow? And hates him specifically for it because it was irritating. It is. You could. A literal 5-year-old would have come up with a more interesting motivation for this village. The original Broly movies are extraordinarily bad. Have you tried Ninja Gaiden Ragebound? I have. It's very, very good.
We just talked about it.
Yeah, it feels very good in the hands. There's, like, a really neat mechanic where, like, when you jump, you can do this, like, spinning slash that is weaker than a normal, than an air attack, but you can bounce off of things with it, especially things that are designed to hurt you. You get a little bit of invincibility, and you bounce higher, so you can use it to get to new areas. There's some fun platforming challenges that revolve around bouncing across various... hazards that are flying at you. It's really neat. It feels good. And if you care a lot about Ninja Gaiden canon, it is concurrent with NES Ninja Gaiden 1, which means after all of the 3D games thus far.
3D games were prequels or sequels? How does any of that work?
They are prequels.
Okay.
Huh. The timeline, to my understanding, as of the most recent 3D game, was Ninja Gaiden Shadow for the Game Boy, Ninja Gaiden 1 on Xbox, Ninja Gaiden Dragon Sword on DS, Ninja Gaiden 2 on 360, Ninja Gaiden 3 on everything. Then Ninja Gaiden 1 on NES, Ninja Gaiden 3 on NES, Ninja Gaiden 2 on NES, and then all of the Dead or Alive games.
Okay.
That, to my understanding, was the timeline as of then. I have no idea how this is affected by Ninja Gaiden 4.
Interesting. It's interesting to me that Ninja Gaiden 3 is a prequel to all of those.
And I guess I never actually knew that Dead or Alive was in the same universe as Ninja Gaiden. Despite those characters being there, I just thought, oh, they're just like crossovers, like King of Fighters does, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that would be reasonable, but no. Officially, to my recollection, the answer is all the Ninja Gaiden games take place, and then the. But I believe, as I was looking this up earlier to jog my memory, I believe that even though that is the case, all of these are still taking place over the course of like 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Like it is a very fast, like it's been an eventful time for the Hayabusa clan. Your answer. Okay, I'm gonna hit one more, and then we'll talk a bit about Wild Hearts, and then plug and close up shop.
Okay.
Your answer to the Earthian question brings a recent piece of news to mind. The creator of the DuckStation PS1 emulator recently had to issue a warning about the Linux version of his emulator. Basically, there are a lot of repackagers, think RetroArch, that include broken versions of DuckStation in their packages. Linux users see broken things, but then they didn't complain to the repackagers, but instead bombarded the DuckStation creator. It happens so often. Like, someone will be fucking around with a version, like an unsupported version. It's like, I didn't even make that. Well, too bad. You're the only one I know how to contact. It's just like, yeah, it's miserable. Like, you
me personally, by the way.
What's that?
He said, scroll down. He said something about Linux users being annoying.
Let's pull this one out.
I thought they just went without saying.
Everyone knows how annoying some Linux users can be, and people really don't read the user manual.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's not attacking
complaint
you personally.
Complaint retracted.
Rescinded.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't read your user manual. My bad.
RTFM, buddy. But yeah. Yeah, it's endless. Like, you can try to explain in as much plain English as possible. You can do everything you can. People will take software and use it in ways it wasn't intended to, remove it from its context, fail to update it, and then complain to you that it doesn't work.
Yeah. The answer is that many people that should not be using Linux are using Linux.
Honestly,
if you are not a developer of software, you should not be using Linux.
Who buddy? But yeah, it's rough out there. It's rough out there. But let's step away from that misery and talk about something that kind of owns.
Wild Hearts S.
Yep, Man Wheels have played a little Wild Hearts S. I think that'll be kind of an ongoing every so often. Man Wheels do some hunts in Wild Hearts S. It's as someone who has a lot of difficulty with Monster Hunter, it has just the right kind of changes that makes it much easier for me to approach. I honestly think a lot of it is down to when I hit something, a number comes out, so I know if it worked.
Well, to be fair, the newer Monster Hunters actually do that now.
Yeah, I haven't paid as much attention to some of them, but yeah, it took a long time. But also, just like, it's nice to like. The bit that they stole from Fortnite, where it's just like, put a thing up and then like go bounding into the air or rocket yourself across the battlefield because you like It's generated a wall or a spring or a zip line or whatever.
And honestly,
I don't know. That's fun.
Yeah. Honestly, assuming they did steal it from Fortnite, they did it so much better and more interesting. Like, it's not just like, oh, here, I throw up a ramp, or I'll just throw up a wall and block your gunshots. That's boring. Like, you drop down a spring and instantly fly at your enemy.
Yeah, the monsters are designed to interact with these, which is nice. Like, they'll some like if you throw up a wall at the right time, they will crash into it, and you will get vulnerability out of them, even though you lose your wall. If they don't crash into it, you can bound off the wall and get unique attacks. Like, the spring I have used occasionally to be like, oh, this thing's about to hit me with something big, and I can't get out of the way fast enough. Spring out of the way.
Yeah, that's one way to use it. I usually give you a lot of to get back into the fight.
Yeah, but both work. It's just it gives you a lot of lateral motion at once, which is very useful. But yeah, in general, like it allows for like what it does that's important is it generates different ways to approach the fight.
Yeah, and we haven't even seen all the ones in the game yet.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it feels good, and it looks good, and it plays good.
Yeah, and I also really like there's some other structures you can build in other places. Like you can build more camps for fast travel and stuff. And at one point, I built a zip line and like zip down to the monster, which is rad.
Which was way faster than walking to it. I say as the person who could not access your zip line and had to walk to it.
Yeah, I had trouble using it too. I wonder if there's a bug there or something. But
no, it literally said like you can't use this. You know, you can't use another player's zip line.
Okay.
Well, at least it told you.
Yeah, no, it was very clear to me that like the problem was you can't use another player's zip line.
Yeah.
But
I mean, honestly, a lot of this felt like a natural evolution of the. I'm gonna mispronounce their. Monster Hunter series, Tweakaden, Tukaden.
Are you going to say Tokiden?
Tokiden, which was a decent enough series of two games of like Monster Hunter likes that never really found a good identity. Like the two games are very different. One is a straight up Monster Hunter clone, and the other is sort of a Monster Hunter clone, but more of kind of just like a general action RPG.
Is that Kiwami?
No, Kiwami is just an updated version of 1. It was just...
There was an actual Tokiden 2.
Yeah, it was a Tokiden 2. Which is on Vita, and Vita and PS4.
The original Tokiden was probably undone by being a Vita exclusive at first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor Vita.
It eventually came to PS4.
Yeah, it's just by that point, it was a little too late.
Yeah. But, I mean, this doesn't really have any DNA from those games other than being, like, inspired by...
A Koei Tecmo take on Monster Hunter-type games.
With, like, Japanese mythological themes. Monster Hunter does some of that, but not this much. So it's
not to this extent.
But just like the building is enough to just differentiate it and give it a different feel, and some of the weapons are a lot more interesting too. The fan, the umbrella thing, which I'm still learning to use, but it's very different from anything in Monster Hunter.
And broadly, just in general, the game is just like the fundamentals are very strong. Like that's the other thing to bring up. It's like we can talk about the gimmicks and things that make it unique, but the important thing is also just that, like, this is in addition to just the core hunting gameplay being very well implemented.
Yeah, like it starts off with a very detailed character creation and kind of just drops you right into the game. There's not a lot of fat in the beginning.
You might have opinions about that.
I do, which I will rattle off really quick, and that this is a reminder of how much Capcom dropped the ball with Monster Hunter Wilds, because Wild Hearts S is better, and it technically came out before that game.
This is, Wild Hearts S is a repackaging of the Toei Tecmo Omega Force developed inexplicably Electronic Arts published in on PS5 and Series X.
They really did this game so dirty.
Like, they released it and had dropped support for it within, like, a month. And so, like, Koei Tecmo had been continued making, like, support updates, but, like, for an audience of no one. Wild Hearts S is all of that wrapped up, ported to Switch 2, and just made into a full game. It's sort of like the... It's Wild Hearts Ultimate. To put it in Monster Hunter terms.
Yeah. And hey, it's also only $50, which probably cost you less than a new copy of Monster Hunter Wilds.
That's very, very good. And, very good. You know, if you are an early Switch 2 adopter, give it a shot. Like, it will scratch that Monster Hunter itch. I believe S also increased the amount of players that can be concurrently together in co-op.
Oh, that's cool.
From what to what?
Okay, I'm trying to remember. I seem to recall it was like a weird number in original.
It was
Wild Hearts. Yeah, I think it was three, and it's been up to like four. Let me check. But yeah, it was a weird number. It was like I said, I think it was three. And yeah, like they did, like with S, they did like a straight up like four player multiplayer introduction video. But yeah, it's a really good game. I hope people will give that a shot.
Hopefully.
But yeah, it's something I will continue. Yeah. So the PC, PS5, and Series X versions were inexplicably three player only. I'm not sure what that was about.
Ugh.
And Wild Hearts S bumps it up to four player, which is just feels like the magic number for this kind of thing. But yeah, it's recommended. I hope that more people will get the chance to try it. Okay, my voice is giving out. It's late, so I'm going to quickly wrap things up. And first, I want to say thanks once again to FireMiner for always giving us many questions to discuss.
Yes, thank you.
Right now, I will say, you should support your local indie author by purchasing one of Gaijin's many fine books. Like most commonly, we bring up Princesses of the Pizza Parlor, which is the ongoing story of sometimes ill-considered social choices and dice rolls among a group of young girls. You can check that one out. That is as he has occasionally mentioned, approaching War and Peace. We'll give it time. I think he'll pass it. I believe in him. You can also check out, let me make sure that I get this title right. I don't want to misdirect anyone. Vainglorious Long Is the Night, which is a Litroidvania. I believe that's what we were going with. But
cool.
Yeah. He put a lot of work into getting the formatting on that to play nicely with different ebook readers. I don't know the full nuances of that, but please go back and recheck a prior episode 407. He would likely have gone into it. Understand that a lot of work goes into these. You can also have Tanuki as a Teapot, which is a retellings of Japanese folk tales, some of which have basically no other extant English adaptations. And there is another book. I feel terrible. I am forgetting its name. Let me see if I can find it. Let's see. Yeah, I don't feel confident enough in saying what exactly its title was. I feel terrible for saying that, but I will say that it was, while the rest of these books have been published under the pen name Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu, this particular book is definitely more for adults and is published under the name Michael Spearwater. If you know what Yarimizu is, you know where that joke came from. But yeah, give those all a look. Support indie authors the same way you should support indie developers. But yeah, Joe, tell us about you, that you both RP gamer branded and indie streamer.
Yeah, so yeah, I've been doing live streams for RP Gamer on Tuesday and Thursday nights on their Twitch channel. So I was doing Visions of Mana like 7 weeks in a row and made a lot of progress, but took a break with Rune Factory Guardians of Azuma. So yeah, I've still been doing that. And that's twitch.tv/rpgamer. If you check out twitch.tv/smokeandjoegamer, that's me. I haven't been doing much on there. I had never built much of an audience on there, but hey, maybe that'll change. You never know. So I'd like to do some streams. It's just I was planning on doing some Saturday streams. It's just that that's the only day of the week when I don't have to do anything, and sometimes I choose not to do anything. So I didn't get around to streaming last Saturday. But yeah, check me out on RP Gamer. So that's around I got it to 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. on Tuesdays, and then I do go a little earlier on Thursdays, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern time. And I still have my YouTube channel. I haven't done much on there. So when the Switch 2 came out, I had done a bunch of videos on just a variety of games, just showing like, how good they look, how good they run. And then I just recently did a video on Resident Evil 2 Remake, where I was just looking at the achievements on Xbox, and I'm looking at some of these low percentages. It's like, well, how come only 68% of people made it to the police station? That's pretty early in the game. How did you not get that far, I wonder? And I just decided, okay, well, let's talk about the achievements in this video, and then let's play the game up until the point where I got all three emblems and put them in the fountain. And it's like, oh, okay, here's where I would have gotten this achievement. Here's where I would have gotten that achievement. Okay, I get it now. Now I remember the order I got them in, and it acted kind of as a tutorial for people maybe struggling with the beginning of the game. So I did that on YouTube. And then I'm on Blue Sky. I've been picking up a bunch of new followers, and unfortunately a lot of them seem to be spam accounts, but still, I got some followers on there, and I post periodically. So, definitely check that out if you don't mind. And, I've got some music content that I work on. So whether it's album reviews or just shredding on guitar and recording that for a few minutes. So, I've always got something going on. So just, check those channels periodically and see if there's any new videos. And continue liking and subscribing and all that nonsense.
The usual.
And you can join the RP Gamer Discord server full of interesting people.
Yeah. If you go to rpgamer.com and click community, that will allow you to chat with our friendly community, where you can also ask us questions in the podcast section of the Discord. You can ask us questions underneath this episode in the comment section on rpgamer.com, and you can ask us questions if you catch us when we stream, like dear friend Fireminer did. That stream time is 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Mondays. We also have our sister show Shenanigans, where we play other things on at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Sundays. In this case, we were playing, like me and Wheels played some Wild Hearts S, which we had a great time with. We had two successful hunts, or I will say one and a half successful hunts and one unsuccessful hunt. That half hunt comes from we killed the wrong thing.
But we killed it.
But yeah, we skinned it, we took it, we made use of all parts of it, so you can't take that away from us. The other thing I would say is that, and then afterwards, Wheels and Joe played some Marvel Rivals, and I'm sure eagerly awaiting getting to see how well Blade ends up playing. But
yeah, Phoenix is very strong. Yeah, we had fun with her.
Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I think that about wraps it up for us. Certainly it wraps it up for my brain. I need sleep before I die. But otherwise, see ya, Space Cowboys.
See ya.
See ya.
Distant land, we're stuck on a whole different planet. No peace looking at the sky, trouble's always all around, so we stay quick with the guns and cannons, standing as long as we can.